You from the U.S. with Horror Frost Noir as well with them. That may about do it. Yes. If you'd like your event placed in said guide, let us know. 786-9782, CQW.ca. Thank you. Happy Record Store Day tomorrow. And do stay tuned for Warning Shots up next.
2013 marks the 10-year anniversary of Elliott Smith's passing, and such Winnipeg artists as French Press, Latka, Merch Table Delight, Surprise Party, Gareth Williams, and many more are paying tribute on Wednesday, May 8th at the Exchange Community Church at 7 p.m. Tickets are $12 and all proceeds go to the Canadian Music Therapy Trust Fund. To Elliott, Love Winnipeg, an Elliott Smith mixtape in honor of Canadian Mental Health Week, is brought to you by CKUW 95.9 FM and the No Label Collective.
Hello and good day. You are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. And CKUW 95.9 FM is your listener-driven radio station on the FM dial in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Scott Price, and today is April the 19th, 2013. On today's show, we will have human rights activist Ali Saeed live in the studio to talk about SHAT, which is spelled K-H-A-T. It's a natural stimulant that is a significant part of the Ethiopian economy. So Ali will be talking about that and some actually the problems that of the fact that there is such a huge concentration of that on the economy in Ethiopia. And also later on in the show, we'll also have an interview I did this morning with Toronto-based freelance reporter, investigative researcher Tim Groves. And he's going to be on to talk about CSIS, that's Canada's spy agency, and kind of about the lack of oversight that CSIS has, and specifically when the Conservative government in their omnibus budget bill recently, that was in the summer, essentially nixed one of the oversight bodies for CSIS. And also there's the issue of how CSIS uses Canadians' citizens' private information. And in information sharing that it does with private companies and things like that. So all of that is coming up on the show today. So stay tuned. And of course, your international news in brief. But of course, as always, I always like to do a couple of announcements at the start of the show before we get going. All right. So, as I said at the top of the show, CKUW is a listener-driven media source here in Winnipeg. And we take that word listener-driven very, very seriously. That means that not only are you supporting us right now by listening, but we also rely on your donations every February during Fund Drive. And so because of this, you know, because of how we work as a media source here on CKUW, I always like to get, you know, you can contact me directly with questions, comments, and concerns, and there's a number of ways you can do that. If you have, you know, questions about the content, if there's a story you want to see covered, or there's something that you think I should look into, then let me know. So there's a couple ways you can do that. There's by phone. So the on-air phone line is 204-774-6877. There's also email. There's my email, warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com. You can also get a hold of our news director, Michael Welsh, at ckuwnews@rocketmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, at warningshots, is another way you can get a hold of me. And I encourage you to do so. Right, and that goes, that's all of our announcements here. Let's get into the international news in brief. Here is some of the news happening around the world right now. Weekly news update on the Americas reports dissident teachers in the southwestern Mexican state of Guerrero continued their protest against planned changes in the educational system on April the 10th with a march in the state capital that brought together a broad range of grassroots and labor groups. According to the State Organizing Committee of Education Workers in Guerrero, the protest sponsor, 100,000 people participated in the protest, making the march the largest in the state since 1984. At a concluding rally in the city of Zacalo, the main plaza, the organizers announced the formation of a new coalition, the Guerrero Popular Movement. Also from Weekly News Update on the Americas, Chilean students held marches in Santiago and about a dozen other cities on April the 11th to step up their two-year campaign for free, high-quality education to replace the highly privatized system that started during the 1973-1990 dictatorship of General Pinochet. While the first march of the new school year on April the 28th drew about 20,000 people, some 150,000 participated in the one on March 11th, according to the organizers, although the authorities put the number at 80,000. Local media said that that was one of the largest marches in the capital in two decades. As usual, small groups confronted the police. 190 were reported arrested, but in general, the march was described as peaceful and even festive. The BBC reports Pakistani's former military ruler Musharraf has been arrested on charges relating to the unlawful detention of judges in 2007. He appeared at a district court on Friday morning amid heavy security. He was initially placed under house arrest at his home in Islamabad, but later transferred to the police headquarters in the city. Mr. Musharraf has described the cases against him as politically motivated. Thursday's order to arrest him was unprecedented move against a former army chief who ruled the country for almost a decade. Although he was present at court when the warrant was issued, police made no attempt to arrest him, and he rapidly returned to his house on the outskirts of the city. He was finally arrested on Friday morning and appeared at the court, where a judge ruled that he should be held in custody for 2 days. The decision to move him from his home to police headquarters appears to be largely procedural. He is expected to appear before an anti-terrorism court in the next 48 hours. His legal team has said that they will challenge the order in Pakistan's Supreme Court. Meanwhile, members of Pakistan's Senate passed a resolution that the former president should be tried on charges of high treason relating to his declaration of a state of emergency in 2007. Interesting stuff going on in Pakistan. And so that is just some of the news happening around the world right now. We're just going to take a brief break, and then we will be back. Ali Saeed will be in the studio to talk about the shot trade in Ethiopia. So do stay tuned. This is Warning Shots, CKW's independent international news show.
We'll be right back.
Yes, and we are back. This is Warning Shots on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. I'm your host, Scott Price, and right now I'm joined by noted human rights activist Ali Saeed. He's been on a couple times. Thank you again for coming on, Ali.
Thanks for having me here.
Now, Ali, let's talk about the chat trade in Ethiopia. So if you could just, for our listeners, what is chat?
I think chat is it's a small green leaf, but you know, most of the people, especially the farmers, the eastern part of Ethiopia and the western part of and the southern part of Ethiopia, the farmers chewing it to have small. It's like a mild stimulant, and when they chew it and swallow, and that's what will happen. They will give them energy that they can work between, you know, 18 hours and 16 hours a day. They are using it for that purpose.
Now this is the chat trade is huge in Ethiopia.
Yes.
And as I understand, it's grown everywhere, and it's taken over a lot of farmers' crops. Like, that's one of the main things that they grow, correct?
Yeah. Many years ago, the chat growing was not, that much and a big income. But the last 20 or 25 years, and it's a big business, especially for the governments, so the present government and the former government leaders like Malazianawi and his wife, they were involved a lot in this the chat trade. And most farmers are forced, instead of growing in like coffee or other crops, unfortunately, this is a big market, and they have to destroy that and plant the chat tree, and they're not getting that much benefit. And all the, the sales and owned by, the profit goes to these the cadres and the party members. They are the one who own that export company. By the way, chat is not only in Ethiopia; it's in Yemen and Israel and in Australia and most, East and Western Africa. And here, I think in Canada, if you are supplying chat, or if they caught you with a bag of chat, and maybe you will be punished, and there is a consequence. To be in prison from 3 years to 10 years.
Wow. So in some countries, it is considered like an illegal drug. Essentially,
yeah. I can give you an example. For example, it's legal in Britannia, in London. Every week, between 8 to 10. Ton chat will be exported from Ethiopia. And then if you go to in Israel, you can grow the plant, the chat tree, at the same time you can sell it, you can use it for your purpose. And again, in Australia, you can get a permit to use for your personal purpose 5 kilograms of chat a day. Mm. But here I think it's, it's too much. I know it's a narcotic, but it's too much.
Now, in reading about this, it's sort of seen as this wonder crop, right? Where there's farmers get good money out of it, and it's better than them. It's not as destroying the environment. Like, rather than farmers using up other crops, like using this, it promotes good land management, increases household incomes. Is that really what's happening here? That it's a good thing for the farmers, or
not really. The farmers need chat only. Not like a big income source, but use it for like stimulant, mild stimulant. But unfortunately, the government side, they know how to make money and export this chat to the other part of the world, so they are encouraging forcing the farmers to grow more chats, and then they can be beneficiaries. They can be benefited. But also, chat has also some side effect. You know, if you are chewing it every day, and you will be depend on it. You know, you will be depend on it, and you may not. It may affect your health. But it's not like marijuana, or it's not like cocaine. It has not even equivalent to that. It's just like triple, espresso.
Oh yeah,
just
a good caffeine jolt.
That's what it is.
Now, in talking about the government of Ethiopia using this so much, I find that interesting because I mean, the Ethiopian government is not democratic by any means.
No.
And yet, you can sell this in other countries and they make money off of it. I mean, this is interesting. So would you want to see like an embargo or a stopping of the trade of chat altogether to kind of put pressure on the Ethiopian government? Or what?
For example, the neighbor countries, Djibouti. They are depending on chat, and they don't have any way that they can grow in Djibouti, those chat. So they have to import it from Ethiopia. Also, the Ethiopian government, as you know, it's not a democratic government. I mean, they don't care about the people. What do they care is about their pocket, how much money to make. If it was me, and I'm quite sure that if there is embargo, not the people and the Ethiopian government will be very disappointed, because in every year, more than between $110 to $120 million are making for themselves. So yeah. This is a big income for the WIN or TPLF government and their cadres.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's also interesting to note that, I mean, the Ethiopian government, as undemocratic as it is, there's not a lot of a pressure applied to it compared to other governments, right? Because they are sort of friendly with the United States and some Western powers, right? I mean, to a certain degree.
Well, you know, they are just like hand in gloves. I mean, they're very close and supported by the Western countries. You know, for example, you see, look, instead of hunting the big shark, like Ethiopian government, and here we are worried, I mean, small suppliers and to attack or to put them down or to put them in jail between 3 years and 10 years. If this is punishable in Canada between 3 and 10 years, why don't they, put embargo in the Ethiopian government? Mm-hmm. And so the Westerns, they don't care anyway.
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up. For that, unless there's anything else you wanted to add to all this, or what else people should know, or if there's a place where they can get some good information on this, or
they can Google it, and if they say can Google chat, and they will get more information. But you know, the very important thing is let people know the most farmers are not benefited from this chat, growing chat, but mm-hmm. the Ethiopian government is the one using it and abuse the farmers.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, yeah. Well, thank you very much, Ali Saeed, for coming on and explaining this. And so chat, K-H-A-T. If anyone wants to go on Google, you can start doing your own research on that.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Yes, thank you. It's always a pleasure having you on, Ali.
Thanks.
We're just going to take a quick break, and we will be back with an interview I did with Tim Groves all on CSIS, the Canadian Spy Agency, and the lack of accountability and transparency there. This is Warning Shots, CKW's independent international news show. We'll be back in a moment. We'll be right back.
brother, one Baba day. You know this Baba, he get everything money can buy. Fancy house, fancy silk, fast fashionable fillers, fast paced time traveler too. But you know my brother and sister and brother and sister and brother and sister and brother and sister and brother and sister. Oh, oh, oh. Mine is a belle no sweet. Wine is Isabella no sweet.
Him belle no go sweet.
Him go realize.
Him belle no go sweet.
When wine is Isabella no sweet, I say.
Him belle no go sweet.
Oh, my brother, another man day, regular guy, you know, Omalanke style, hard worker, no fancy nothing. No cover from sun or rain, no transport to hard work. The only thing you can rely on is CCO. But you know what? Our brothers and sisters and uncles and cousins and everybody know who na here. When is this Isabella day sweet?
In Bella go day sweet.
When is this Isabella day sweet?
Yes, and we are back. You are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. You just heard just a moment ago, I had Ali Saeed on, and the music today is brought to you by Auntie Ballas, and this is off of their newest record, self-titled, called Auntie Ballas on Daptones Records. So most, just about everything I've ever heard that comes off of Daptones Records is usually good, so... this is no different. Moving along with the show, as I said at the top of the show, now we're going to have an interview I did this morning with freelance reporter and investigative researcher Tim Groves, where he's going to be talking. He's done a lot of digging on CSIS, the Canadian spy agency. And so this is going to be talking about the lack of oversight that now is present over CSIS, and as well as how CSIS shares private information. So this is, without further ado, this is my interview with Tim Groves, all on CSIS.
Tim, now in the omnibus budget bill, the Conservatives basically they scrapped the Office of Inspector General. That was one of the two bodies that had oversight over CSIS. So
yes.
What kind of effect will this have on the oversight of CSIS?
Well, I mean, it's a tricky question to know exactly what the impact is, but the short answer is that more oversight of the agency probably protects Canadians' rights more than less oversight. And there were roles being performed by this office called the Inspector General that aren't going to be performed by the still existing Security Intelligence Review Committee, CIRC. So when we see the oversight, we often, you know, when you look at this, there's often reason to question if the oversight is effective. And I've definitely heard a lot of, you know, activists saying, oh, it's worthless, the oversight. But it is some of the only ways that you get, you know, critical, you know, get information of what's going on inside. It's so secret that you'll get a, you know, a report by CERC or a report by the Inspector General that give you, like, a clue as to what's going on inside the service. And the other way that information gets out is through through courts. But even in all of that, there's so much restrictions in what gets released. A lot of things are, you know, exempted under national security provisions that sort of give broad latitude for there to be this room to not release information. And the Inspector General was an office that it really was a service to the minister to know what was going on inside CSIS, but, you know, would often, you know, raise issues to the minister of what needed to be changed if there were problems that were occurring in the service, and try to give those reports to make sort of more behind-the-scenes sort of changes and reforms to stop some of the abuses that, you know, spy agencies are always tempted to fall into. And this Inspector General's office also wrote, you know, some of their reports that were written to the minister, portions of them would be made public, and we'd get a glimpse of what was going on inside the service.
I think just to make it a bit more clear for listeners, so there's the Office of Inspector General, then you have the Security Intelligence Review Committee. Now, these are the two oversight bodies. Now, so do they, like, overlap? How did their jurisdiction of how they looked over CSIS, how did that work?
Yeah, they were both created at the same time as the service in 1982 or 1984. I've forgotten the exact details right now, but I think it was 84, and it was 84. And basically, when they were created, it was the result of something called the McDonald's Commission, and the precursor to CSIS was the RCMP's security service, and this group had you know, broken numerous laws, had spied on, you know, social justice groups, had spied on political parties like the Parti Québécois, had really been doing a lot of dirty tricks, kidnapping, burning down barns. There was a whole litany of things that they'd done to try and influence the politics in the nation, often targeting groups that had no criminal behavior, but that whose politics might not have been ones that aligned with the views of government. So out of this, when a lot of journalists were able to expose a lot of this, you ended up having a situation where this commission called the McDonald Commission was held, and they were trying to recommend a system that wouldn't allow the same abuses that had existed under the RCMP. So they wanted a sort of overlapping system where there were multiple layers of oversight. And when Parliament implemented those recommendations, it ended up being two layers. The Security Intelligence Review Committee, which is supposed to serve the House of Commons, and this Inspector General is supposed to serve the Minister. And the Inspector General is sort of a single appointee who goes in and really looks at the day-to-day workings of CSIS and tries to understand what's going on. And the other body, the Security Intelligence Review Committee, is more of a complaints-driven body where people would bring forward complaints about the running of CSIS, and they would have sort of more like a, you know, like a little tribunal to do those. And then the Security Intelligence Review Committee, that complaints body, also does reviews of certain aspects of the service's behavior. So they'll write reports on, you know, different things that are going on inside CSIS. And so those were the two bodies, and now CERC has taken over. The Inspector General's office doesn't exist, and supposedly CERC will be fulfilling both sets of functions, although there's skepticism that they'll really be going in and doing that nitty-gritty looking at the inside of the ministry when they have you know, very limited resources. Not the ministry, the service.
Right. Now, we'll get to that effectiveness of CERC in a moment, but, you know, it was said in the reporting that you did that this scrapping of the Office of Inspector General is simply about eliminating redundancy. What is your response to that?
Well, that's definitely the government's line that, you know, the whether it's the Prime Minister or the Minister of Public Safety, they've decided that they want to get rid of this this part of government, and I think they're removing all sorts of different bodies that exist, and this is one of the ones that they've targeted. And there's definitely the PR line that's coming out, and I think there's definitely voices, a lot of voices that have come out that have been countering that position. I think that it doesn't seem like they're doing the exact same thing, but that multiple layers of oversight means more protection for Canadians. And the truth is, like, we give immense powers to CSIS to spy on Canada's own citizens and other people in the country, and people deserve, layers of protection. Whether or not, I don't want to say that the Inspector General and CERC as it was enough of a protection, but right now there's even less protection that exists for Canadians. We really don't know what's going on inside, and we really have to trust in, these. At one point we had to trust in two oversight bodies, and now we're down to having to trust in this one oversight body that exists. And that's really all we have to know that CSIS isn't, breaking the law, violating our civil liberties, and really going after, violating, different groups in Canada. So, violating their rights, intruding on them. So, that's sort of what we're left with, is a sense of, like, if you want to know that CSIS is doing good, you have to really put trust in these bodies, and it's even less, there's one less body that they're sort of backing it up.
Yes, now, moving this forward again, is now this leaves only the Security Intelligence Review Committee to deal with public complaints and reviews of CSIS. Is this, you said that it's underfunded or they don't have enough resources, so, and what you just were saying too, but talk about this more, about the effectiveness of how CERC could be effective in the oversight of CSIS and the problems within that.
Well, I mean, one of the problems, there's a lot of different aspects to this, but there is definitely, CERC isn't a large organization. It does have limited funds, so it can only do so much probing and examining with the resources that it has. But that aside, there's a lot of reasons out there to question whether CERC is really probing as deeply as it could. There's definitely been voices that have, spoken, come out, whistleblowers or people who've talked about things that are going on inside the service and really presented this idea that the Security Intelligence Review Committee, isn't doing the sort of probative job to really get at what's going on inside the agency. They're very, they have a very friendly relationship with CSIS, and they're willing to take the CSIS version of things. So that's been, definitely been voiced, but the truth is, there's no way of knowing. We have to, all we have is this review committee, and if it's all we have, if you don't trust it, then there's nothing you can, we don't know how good they're doing, and there's no real good way to evaluate how good a job CERC is doing. We see the reports, portions of the reports they make are made public, and we can go on that, but it's hard to know exactly what's going on inside CSIS, and we have to, what we get is what CERC tells us, and I don't want to say that we need to put trust in them, but it's really the only reporting mechanism that's coming out now to say what's going on inside Canada's spy agency.
Now, I guess this brings up the other question of, is CSIS, even just as an entity, too powerful for effective oversight? Because it seems that that it does wield a lot of power, and it's hard to actually, as you said, probe in to see what is happening internally.
Well, I guess it depends on your politics and how you view the role of a spy agency. I mean, there's a lot of things where, around warrants, around, the rights to intrude on people that CSIS has, that, would go beyond what a police force would have, where, the level of secrecy involved is much higher. The public really isn't able to get that sort of, when police do things, often information comes out in court, and we get to know bits and pieces of what's going on, and when there's things that go beyond a line of what's tolerated for the Canadian public, we are able to know that. But with the spy agency, with CSIS, very few things end up in court. So there's really no way of knowing a lot of the time what's going on. And you know, even when things do end up in court, anything to do with national security gets, you know, exempted, not allowed out into the public light. So if you want a, you know, if you believe in a country where there's more of like the, you know, police state sort of apparatus where things are, you know, done by the police and you have absolute faith that government is acting in people's best interest, then having, you know, CSIS have all these powers is good. But if you don't have that sort of trust, if the Canadian public or people, you know, don't want there to be those sorts of powers, then CSIS needs to have its powers curtailed. That, you know, the many of the things that are being done by CSIS could be tackled in, you know, in other ways, using the ways like using warrant powers, having to go to judges, having more things be made public. And, you know, if right now we have a system where much of it is happening in secrecy and, you know, there's immense powers, there may be violations going on, but we don't know. There's no, the CERC isn't telling us that there's violations. So that's all we have is that they're not, or they're highlighting, you know, small violations, but they're not bringing up anything major. So that's what we get right now.
Now, in talking more about issues around CSIS and privacy and what CSIS does, you also just recently wrote an article for the Dominion where you talked about how CSIS is sharing information and specifically to private companies. So explain that issue.
Well, yeah. So basically, you know, CERC writes these, you know, reviews of different activities that are going on, and they wrote one on CSIS's private sector relationships. And, you know, I was looking through it, and it really jumped out at me. And there were sent like two sentences back to back, and one said, you know, CSIS is not allowed to share with the private sector, and the next sentence said CSIS like, we agree with the way that CSIS shares with the private sector. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically seemed like this strange contradiction where CERC was on the one hand admitting that there were laws that, you know, really questioned or quite restrictive on how CSIS could share with the private sector, pretty much, you know, but then seemed to be pretty much okay that it was going on. There was no, you know, criticism that the fact that the sharing really was going on. It seemed like a strange contradiction to me. So I started to look into it more, and I was asking around, and that's sort of the basis of the article. That this report, you know, it almost had everything to be scathingly attack CSIS, but it really, you know, watered it down and gave CSIS the pass. And I noticed, you know, basically what the report was saying is that there is different ways that sharing happens with the private sector, and it sort of outlines some of them. These reports are pretty dry, and there's you know, restrict, like not everything is made available. They don't, lots of pieces are redacted or blacked out, so you can't see exactly what's being saying. But it really painted this picture that, you know, that like partly it was just the fact that these laws seem to say that the private sector isn't allowed to share with the private sector. And yeah, that was happening. But the other piece that jumped out for me was the way that, you know, CERC seemed to really give a pass to CSIS on this. And I called up Ron Atke, who was one of the first chairs of CERC, and, you know, asked him what he thought of this. And he said that really he thinks that the role of CERC isn't to do this sort of, like, look for problems when they aren't already brought out in public, that it's really a matter of letting sleeping dogs lie. And that means that the Canadian public, you know, if CERC isn't going to go, from his opinion, CERC, it's not the role of CERC to really go and probe and see if there's a problem with this private sector collaboration until those problems are made public. So we're basically waiting for the problems to happen, not, you know, waiting for the problems to come to light before the oversight body is going to tackle them. And so that was the other piece that really came through in this article.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll leave it there, Tim. Thanks a lot for coming on and explaining all these goings-on with CSIS.
Yeah, no worries. I hope it's...
And that was my interview with Tim freelance reporter and investigative journalist Tim Groves, all on what's happening with CSIS and sort of the changes of oversight of CSIS, as well as some other policies pertaining, as you just heard, to how they share private information. So if you go on, there's Bari Patch, where he wrote an article recently, as well as on the Media Co-op. You can find some of his work as well. Well, I'll also get up his website here in a second for you so you can find that out. The other thing, too, is recently, when was this, in March? Yeah, March 14th. Also, for the Uniter, Graham Natchuk, he's a political writer and artist. Some of you might know him, author of the Progressive Winnipeg blog. He does some foreign policy commentary as well on top of the other stuff that he does. He also penned an article for the Uniter, wrote an article that was published. Here I'm looking online here. It says March 14th. It's called Discipline and Publish. Op-ed alerts CSIS brings surveillance to light. So you can find that out if you look on the Uniter's website. You can also find some Graham, a local journalist as well. If you're looking for Tim Groves' website, it's timgrovesreports.wordpress.com. If you Google Tim Groves, you'll find it. Last name spelled Groves. And so there's some neat stuff. Also, apparently, whether or not blind people can actually access file freedom of information requests, which is a recent one that he has, also is a lot of his other journalism and work that he has done. So there's a couple things. So the Uniter, Graham Natchuk, has wrote a thing on CSIS a little while ago, about a month ago. And then there's also Tim Groves' website. So you can find uniter.ca. And then if you go Tim Groves Reports, one word, .wordpress.com, more information on all the goings on with CSIS. Now we will be going for a quick break, and then maybe probably a bit more music, and then after that, closing out the show. But do stay tuned. I have some news here about some other coverage and stories that will be happening soon. So do stay tuned. This is Warning Shots, CKW's independent international news show.
Time for a CETA myth-busting fact from the Council of Canadians.
Harper's myth: CETA would not prevent Canada's municipal governments from sourcing goods and services locally.
CETA fact: the procurement rules in CETA will prohibit any covered government or public agency from preferring one bidding firm over another based on the amount of Canadian or local content in the goods or services being offered.
Call your MLA. Go to Canadians.org for more information.
So simple.
got a story for you. Oh yeah. Kuru kuru kere. Kuru kuru kere. Kuru kuru kere. Ha. Oh yeah. Man see two rats go by, so him go and get the trap.
But him no go catch him rat, him no get security.
In him trap him catch him mole, in him trap him catch a snake.
And we are back. This is Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. I'm your host, Scott Price, and we are just last 5 minutes of the show. So today, you heard from first Ali Said, noted human rights activist, torture survivor from Ethiopia, talking about the chat trade in Ethiopia and sort of the large amounts of money that the Ethiopian government makes off of that. As well, you heard my interview with investigative journalist Tim Groves on CSIS and questions and concerns about the lack of oversight of CSIS, specifically with the conservative government, nixing one of the oversight bodies of CSIS, and as well as how CSIS shares Canadians' information as well, private information, and how they do that. So that was the show, as well as you heard music from Auntie Ballas as well off of Daptones Records. And that was the show for today. Now, for next week, hopefully, now it's something I've been looking into, like I've said the last couple weeks that I've been doing research in. It looks like next week there's a good chance we will have an interview on the situation of the land grabs and forced displacement in southern Ethiopia, which is basically, if you follow down the line, essentially funded by the World Bank. So hopefully that will be on for next week, but I have to see about that. That still needs to be scheduled, but it's looking very good for that. Let's stop that. Yes, and so that is what we have to look forward to for next week. I'm hoping that'll be next week, but we will see. But that is the end of the show. So questions, comments, concerns, there's a couple ways you can get those out and to myself and to CKUW in general. Now, the office phone number is 204-786-9782. My email is warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com. And then you can also email our news director, ckuwnews@rocketmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at warningshots. I encourage you to also follow CKUW on Twitter at CKUW to find out all the things that are happening. So like I said, hopefully we'll see about the situation in Ethiopia and what's happening there. And then as well, there'll be a couple other stories I'm following, but that is the one I hope to have for you next week, but we will see. But until that time, I thank you again for listening and supporting listener-driven media here in Winnipeg as well. I hope you all have a safe and fun weekend. And be kind to one another and take care of one another. And until next Friday, until next Friday, just, stay safe out there. And I'll talk to you all next Friday. As always, though, stay tuned. Next things that are coming up, we have Mercy of Slumber, Now Sounds, and then Peg City Groove. So keep it locked here on CKUW 95.9 FM for your Friday afternoon. Keep it locked here. It's going to be good radio, excellent radio, as it always is. And as well, coming up right away is the Community Cupboard. So stay tuned for all of that. This is Scott Price signing off. I'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Grab yourself a pen and some paper. It's time for CKW's Community Cupboard. Announcements and resources from and in your community. If you have a public service announcement or a community resource to share, contact us at 786-9782 or email ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca.
And here's your community cupboard. CKUW 95.9 FM presents the 11th Annual University of Winnipeg Student Film Festival, featuring films made by post-secondary students registered in school between April 2012 and April 2013. The festival will take place at the U of W Wednesday, May 1st, 1 to 3. Yeah. 2013 in Eckhart Gramatte Hall. All festival events are free and open to the public. Unfortunately, they don't have any more information about that.